From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, July 15th, 2014. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The KUAF Summer Jazz Series welcomes the return of the Sons of Brasil, July 20th at 3 p.m. at 21C Hotel in Bentonville. The Sons of Brasil will perform samba, jazz, and bossa nova with a flavor and passion one might think could only be found at a nightclub in Brazil. This series is presented by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society. Tickets are available online at KUAF.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, four men seeking the office of governor weigh in on what they might do with the private option expansion if elected. And the people trying to stop illegal dumping in counties across the region as well.
We'll also hear comments from last evening's ribbon cutting for a new stretch of trail in Fayetteville that will allow easier access to Mount Kessler and more.
First, a proposed parking deck in downtown Fayetteville may be closer to reality after the city council meeting tonight. The council will consider a contract for demolition of the Walton Arts Center's offices on School Avenue, which will make way for excavation and site preparation work for a new parking deck at the corner of School and Spring Streets. Jeremy Pate, the city's project manager for the parking deck, says the site will soon see a flurry of construction activity.
Well, beginning about the first week of August, what you would see is contractors beginning to set up a job trailer, some equipment being delivered, traffic control devices being placed out, so things like construction barrels and cones and silt fence and erosion control, things of that nature that you see generally with a construction site as they begin to mobilize. About a week or so later, you'll start to see the actual office building be demolished and materials separated to be taken to be recycled or taken to the landfill. And then lastly, you'll start to see some of the larger equipment, dump trucks and large excavators pulling out the soil. Some of the parking deck and the liner buildings are actually subgrade. They're sort of basement level or below grade.
Meaning crews will have to dig a pit into the site before construction can begin. Cost for demolition and excavation of the site is estimated at about $240,000. Overall cost of phase one of the parking deck project, which includes site preparation, will be about $450,000, lower than the $615,000 figure put forth in the most recent project cost estimates from a few months ago. Pate says project planners have been working to keep costs down.
We presented that information to the council and stated that we would continue working on value engineering, which we did before final construction documents were completed. Well, we believe we cut out at least another $800,000, if not more, in just design changes. And then we also are hoping, and we're seeing at least this first phase of bids come in below what the construction estimates were going to be, because of the competitive nature of bidding, contractors wanting those jobs. We also, though, reported to the council that I believe, as the project manager, that the initial bids were simply lower than what the construction of the project was going to be, and so we don't really anticipate it ever getting back down that low, even with competitive bidding.
City leaders won't decide on how to bridge the funding gap for the project until all the construction bids are submitted and a final project price is calculated.
The Arkansas ACT Academy at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville is receiving a boost with a $10,000 contribution from Verizon. The Academy is a summer program sponsored by the U of A's College Access Initiative, and it serves 240 underrepresented high school students from across Arkansas. The program is designed to help prepare students for the ACT exam during the course of an intensive five-day program.
The City of Eureka Springs is affirming a previous City Council decision to endorse marriage equality. Last night, the Council approved by a vote of 5-1 to formally endorse a Married to Equality reception for the state's first LGBT newlyweds in Eureka on August 2nd. The city hosted the first legal same-sex weddings in the state in May after Pulaski County Circuit Judge Chris Piazza overturned the state's constitutional ban against same-sex marriages. Michael Walsh is the author of last night's resolution.
On the surface, it was a mild-mannered, feel-good resolution, but it had as much historical significance as the fact that in May, Eureka Springs became the first city in the Bible Belt in which same-sex couples were lawfully married. It's a powerful official statement of support for marriage equality from the most progressive, gay-friendly city in the state. No other city in Arkansas, possibly the entire South, has endorsed the freedom to marry twice in less than 2 years, and on top of that, issued a blanket invitation to a public wedding reception for gay and lesbian newlyweds. And And also, by adopting the resolution, the city effectively distanced itself from Carroll County officials who closed the courthouse to gay couples after issuing only 15 licenses in May.
Legal same-sex marriages in Arkansas remain on hold pending a decision from the Arkansas Supreme Court.
Arkansas's last gravel state highway will eventually be paved. State Highway 220 extends nearly 8 miles from the Lee Creek area in Crawford County to Devil's Den State Park in Washington County. Randy Ort, spokesman for the Arkansas Highway Transportation Department, says the reason Arkansas still has a stretch of dirt highway in 2014 is simply an issue of timing.
Back in the mid-1980s, there was a major road program here in Arkansas called the Rural Road Program, and its primary goal was to get Arkansas out of the mud, to pave all the unpaved state highways over a 10-year period from 1985 to 1995. And that program was actually very successful, and we did pave all of the unpaved state highways that we had at that point in time. However, this section, which is now State Highway 220, goes through the National Forest. It was originally a Forest Service road. Then it became a county road, but we took it on to the state highway system, and it became State Highway 220 in the late 1990s. So that is why we still have one unpaved state highway in Arkansas.
But Arkansas 220 won't be fully paved anytime in the near future. Ort says there is no specific time frame set for the project.
What we did is we applied for some dedicated special federal funding in 2013 for this project, and we think it's probably going to cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 to $15 million to pave the entire stretch. We applied for this Federal Lands Access Program funding, or FLAP funding. We applied for enough money to do the whole thing. However, we only received $4 million.
In addition, Ort says a survey of endangered bat species in Devil's Den must be complete before work can begin on paving the nearby highway.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals still have a slim lead in the Texas League North standings, despite losing to Tulsa 6-1 last night in Springdale. The Nats now lead the Arkansas Travelers by just a half game after the Travs game last night in North Little Rock was postponed by rain. Northwest Arkansas and Tulsa play again tonight at Arvest Ballpark at 7:05.
Partly cloudy tonight with lows from 52 in Northwest Arkansas to 59 in the Arkansas River Valley. Partly sunny tomorrow with highs from 78 to 82. And tomorrow night, expect mostly cloudy conditions with a chance for showers and thunderstorms and lows from 62 to 66.
This is Ozarks at Large. Litter strewn along Arkansas streets and highways creates blight, but we're seeing fewer pieces of litter each year. However, every year, hundreds of Arkansans still toss entire truckloads of trash onto public, private, and commercial property. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports on illegal dumping in Arkansas and the efforts to minimize it.
Andrew Coleman examines a pile of rubble beneath a busy Interstate 49 bridge on Wind Creek Road in rural Washington County, northwest of Winslow. He's Washington County Environmental Enforcement Officer. Someone's pushed off a half dozen tires and a van seat into the ditch, but they left something else next to one of the tires.
A piece of paper that does have some markings on it. It shows a gentleman out of Greenwood, Arkansas.
Typically at all illegal dump sites, Coleman must dig into some pretty gnarly trash to collect any forensic evidence. With enough evidence, Coleman writes up a narrative report, then hands it over to a prosecuting attorney who pursues the violator through the courts if need be. Fines can be as high as $1,000 per violation. But in this case, Coleman believes the paper was planted as a ploy, so it's likely the culprit will never be caught. And with the trash being just 20 feet from the banks of Wind Creek, a tributary to the West Fork of the White River, Coleman and his crew will have to clean it up.
I've got a gentleman that works with me, Steve Huxtable. He runs the Graffle truck, which is a good-sized truck with a graffle on the top of it. They'll come out here and grab this, take it into our county dumpster. The tires will go on a tire trailer going to Boston Mountain Solid Waste, and then the chair or the bench seat will just go in the dumpster.
Now, if you didn't clean this up, explain what would happen.
If I didn't get this cleaned up, there would probably be, within a week to 2 weeks, there would be more additional tires here. mattresses, maybe couches, but the phenomenon of folks that see a dumping spot in their mind, that means to them that it's okay to dump.
One reason why people illegally dispose of trash is financial, Coleman says. Some just don't want to pay curbside pickup fees, which can cost around $20 a month. Rural residents can also opt to haul their trash to Boston Mountain Solid Waste District Transfer Station, but that costs $3 per bag or $50 per truckload. Bulky items like tires, batteries, old furniture, and appliances can cost extra. So some Washington County residents just prefer pitching their trash wherever for free. But it costs taxpayers money in the end. Most counties have trained and licensed illegal dumps control officers. Andrew Coleman travels up to 80 miles a day around Washington County in his four-wheel drive pickup, scouting for environmental outlaws.
Try to meet with the folks who own the property or the violator himself, and then I address the issue with them, educate them on the dangers of illegal dumping or if it's illegal burning, give them so many days to clean up the property, or at that point a citation will be issued. This was the site that I'm going to show you.
We stop off at another illegal dump site north of Winslow along Rural Highway 71 on private property, so we can't get out of the vehicle. Before us stands a small green meadow with an empty doghouse. But just a few months ago, before photos reveal 5 tons of debris, refuse from a foreclosed home cleaning service the violators operated. In the end, they paid a waste hauler $300 to bring a dumpster on site, which they loaded up with trash to avoid being cited. And they appear to be keeping the place clean. Back on the road, Coleman says certain landscapes seem to invite dumping.
Riverways, dirt roads that have a U-turn in it, you know, where you can see both directions, or the holler next door, you know, a ravine.
Coleman says some even toss their trash from bridges into creeks and rivers where it's eventually washed away. But that creates a chronic mess for downstream residents, as well as groups like Beaver Watershed Alliance, which routinely, with the help of lots of volunteers, pull tons of household trash out of regional streams every spring and fall. Most municipal governments in Arkansas have environmental enforcement officers, as do solid waste districts. We have 18 of those in Arkansas. Illegal dumping, known as midnight dumping, is considered an environmental crime. Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality fields all sorts of illegal waste deposition complaints, from corporate to rural trash piles. The numbers have fluctuated from a low of 243 complaints in 2008 to as many as 859 in 1996. That's when the agency began adding more environmental inspectors. This is ADEQ spokesperson Catherine Beninati.
We work with divisions in ADEQ, you know, solid waste, air, water, but we also work with county officials, city officials, and in certain cases we'll work with wildlife officers, forest rangers, and city code enforcement as well.
ADEQ keeps solid waste illegal dumps data files with detailed supporting documents. Washington County lists 116 complaints filed over the past decade against private individuals and companies, including Roll-Off Services, which is a trash collection company, ironically. A Lincoln poultry farmer was cited for piling dead chicken carcasses in open fields. A search of Carroll County shows 37 records over the past decade, ranging from a construction debris pile behind the Great Passion Play amusement park to a trashed ravine in a depressed residential district known as Taterville. Statewide, Pulaski County has the most complaints filed, while Sharp County has the least. But that's simply because there are more people in Pulaski County, says ADEQ spokesperson Catherine Beninati.
They are unsightly. No one wants to be near them. They can smell. But they can also pose some health hazards from vectors such as rats, insects, snakes. So those can carry diseases or present physical hazards. Like I said, they stink. And in certain cases, depending on what is dumped, you can have contamination to surface and groundwater, or, you know, hazards to public health and the environment.
Catherine Beninati lauds public campaigns like Keep Arkansas Beautiful, which are helping.
They and other organizations have just done such a great job getting the message out, organizing cleanups, and really putting this in the public's eye. And districts have too.
Back at the Washington County Environmental and Recycling Office in the Maintenance and Operations Center, Director Sophia Stevenson says they're constantly doing public outreach.
Well, we have one educator, one full-time educator, and one part-time educator, and their job is to work with the public, all ages. We do outreach 3-year-olds to senior citizens on proper solid waste disposal and conservation of natural resources. So part of that is letting people know the services we have in place, but also the services that are in place in other communities, whether that's City of Fayetteville or Springdale or our solid waste district, Boston Mountain Solid Waste District. So we want to encourage people to use services, whether it's services that we operate or other people operate.
Stevenson says all county residents have access to legal solid waste services now, and twice a year residents can dispose of big items at no cost.
A bulky waste cleanup twice a year where people have to bring it to us or to the landfill, and that's free twice a year that happens. We also have our household hazardous waste facility where people can bring lawn and garden chemicals, automotive fluids, batteries, electronics, tires. And the majority of that is accepted for free. All of the household chemicals are free for residents to dispose of. Tires, people can bring 4 per month for free, 4 per resident for free. And then the electronics or additional tires just have a small fee. And so there are ways for people to dispose of these items properly.
But illegal, or what's called wildcat dumping, will persist into the far future. And there's legal mechanisms to try and quell it. In Arkansas, environmental enforcement officers must typically present 2 pieces of identification dug up at illegal trash sites to pursue a case. Andrew Coleman, who fields up to 200 complaints a year in Washington County, says 40% of illegal dump sites in his district will yield clear evidence, and 15% of those violators will end up in the courts. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to file a complaint about an illegal dump in your county, you can contact the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality. They'll refer you to the proper local authorities or to your local solid waste district.
In under 20 minutes on Ozarks, how a Fayetteville-based company is receiving international notice for work on electric car battery chargers.
And then go to lunch on an electric charge, saving fuel, saving space in the vehicle, and really changing the way onboard battery chargers will be implemented in the vehicle, and as well opening up other applications from golf carts to heavy vehicles to anywhere you have a battery to be charged and you need a smaller, lighter weight, more efficient technology.
Arkansas Power Electronics International's product was placed on the 2014 edition of R&D Magazine's list of 100 important technological products introduced in the past year. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
No matter what movie you see at the multiplex, the price will be pretty much the same. Does that seem right?
From flop to blockbusters, from opening night to it's been in the theaters for 3 months, is basically a single price. It's crazy.
But it's also tradition. Planet Money asked why, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
It begins at 3 this afternoon, here on 91.3 FM, KUAF Public Radio.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last Friday, the Arkansas Press Association hosted 3 debates at its 2014 Super Convention in Hot Springs. The early afternoon session featured Arkansas's 4 gubernatorial candidates: Republican Asa Hutchinson, Democrat Mike Ross, Libertarian Frank Gilbert, and Green Party candidate Josh Drake. All 4 candidates fielded a number of questions, including one regarding the state's expansion of Medicaid, known as the private option. Republican Asa Hutchinson questioned how the state is going to afford the private option in the long term.
Right now, we're seeing that the average premium, you read in the paper today, I believe it is higher than what was expected, which means we're violating our federal waiver, which means we have to get another waiver. Are we going to be stuck with that cost? We're obviously going to be picking up 10% of this expansion cost down the road. We also want to look at whether it's obviously doing a great job for our rural hospitals. We're very pleased with that. But how about the other aspects of it? Are we getting it to the right people? Is it accomplishing the objectives of the plan? I want to work with the legislature to make the right judgment in the future in terms of its cost, its affordability, accomplishing the purpose, and make the adjustments that might be needed. And one principle I have is make sure that our programs are incentive for people to work, versus an incentive for people not to work.
Libertarian Frank Gilbert took a similar stance. Gilbert told audience members to vote for him if they wanted to vote for someone who unequivocally opposes the private option.
The private option is the only portion, as Asa said, of the mess called the Affordable Care Act that the state of Arkansas had any control over. And a newly minted Republican legislature, for the first time since the Yankee troops went north, came to power and voted to expand Medicare to force more people onto a large government program and to spend tax dollars as foolishly as we've seen it done in our lifetimes. The private option is a terrible idea tacked on to a disgusting idea. I would just do anything that the governor of Arkansas can to get the state of Arkansas out of this coalition with the government in Washington.
Mike Ross said he was one of three Democrats who voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. He noted that he thought the plan had good parts and bad parts, but he always believed Medicaid expansion was one of the good parts of the Affordable Care Act.
One of the reasons I voted against the Affordable Care Act is it did cut Medicare reimbursement rates to hospitals. It did. But they said they're going to make them whole again, sort of, with this Medicaid expansion because they're going to start getting paid to treat people they were treating for free and writing off. That's why every hospital in Arkansas overwhelmingly supports the private option. States that are refusing to do it, that are turning away these federal dollars, which are your tax dollars, we're already seeing rural hospitals begin to close. Secondly, what we did here was so novel, it was bipartisan, it was market-based, it was so creative, so innovative, that we had to go to the federal government and get a waiver to be able to implement it. That's how far removed it is from the Affordable Care Act. Finally, let me tell you who we're talking about. We're not talking about people that don't want to work. They already get Medicaid. They're on traditional Medicaid. It's the people that's trying to do the right thing. ASA wants to know, we're giving it to the right people? Yes, we are. We're giving it to the people that are trying to do the right thing and stay off welfare, but they're working the jobs with no benefits. It's the right thing to do. It's fiscally responsible. It makes sense. I would have voted for it. I would have signed it. And as governor, I'll protect the funding for the Medicaid private option.
Green Party candidate Josh Drake said civilized and successful nations have universal health care, which is what he believes the United States should have.
The Supreme Court said this bill is unconstitutional in this one area, and so the states now have this option. It's absolutely lunacy to consider not taking the money from the states, because it will close down all your hospitals. Look at all these southern states that have turned the money away. They're all finally slowly figuring this out, and it wouldn't make sense for Arkansas at the time. All the other states are finally figuring out that they can't live without it. Suddenly we turn it away. It just doesn't make sense. It's part of that Medicaid dollars is that there's no way to recover that money. The legislation, when it was written in Washington, it replaced this money. You weren't supposed to have that. There wasn't supposed to be a private option. Now, whether or not you call it a private option or whether or not you just accept the federal dollars as they should be is something you can debate. I think we need to get the insurance companies out of the medical business. I think we can save a lot of money if our insurance premiums aren't going to pay insurance executives. They're going to provide medical care. That's why I support universal health care. And so I think we cannot live without the private option. And in addition to all that, it's the humane thing to do. It's hardworking people who need health care.
All four candidates made those remarks during a debate in Hot Springs last Friday afternoon. The event, which was hosted by the Arkansas Press Association, was streamed live online. KATV Channel 7 in the Central Arkansas market, as well as KHBS KHOG Channel 4029 in the Northwest Arkansas and River Valley markets, will live stream a debate between Democrat Mike Ross and Republican Asa Hutchinson October 7th. Both stations will also air the debate, which will take place at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. This is Ozarks at Large.
Something that has been months, even years in the making, culminated last evening with a ribbon cutting to the southeast of Mount Kessler in Fayetteville. About 75 people gathered as a temporary trailhead was unveiled to mark the occasion. Also there, Ozarks at Large's Christina Karnatz, who has this report.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you for being here today to celebrate the official opening of the Mount Kessler Trailhead. I'm Allison Jumper, Park Planning Superintendent for the City of Fayetteville.
Jumper got things started as members of the public and representatives from many organizations gathered in the shade under two tents guarding from the sun in 95-degree temperatures. That was before today's cold front had made its way in. Efforts to preserve areas of Mount Kessler on the south side of Fayetteville have been going on for years, but came together when the City Council approved a deal to purchase 376 acres from Chambers Bank in February. The deal closed in March. The purchase was made using money from city reserves and a matching grant from the Walton Family Foundation. The terms of the grant stipulated that a trailhead granting public access had to be constructed within 90 days. A gravel lot on Judge Cummings Road, just a few yards off of Cato Springs Road, and a wooden sign with an arrow pointing to a grassy but mowed trail that reads Mount Kessler is just that, the trailhead. Just behind the sign to the north of the lot is the land intended for a regional park known to some as Southland Pass.
The acquisition and preservation of Mount Kessler perfectly dovetails with the development of the park. This acreage that you see back, just back behind this tree line, the mountain, it is going to provide a one-stop recreation area for our citizens. We will be able to offer a diverse recreational opportunity for everyone, all ages, all sizes, all abilities. And that is something that came from the community when we did our master plan back in 2000, and we're going to be able to make it happen thanks to this.
Jumper says construction on the park and a permanent trailhead will begin at the end of the year. She went on to thank city staff for the construction of the trailhead and for the trail connecting the trailhead to the Mount Kessler property. Also thanked Harps for donating watermelon to the event. And she introduced Jeremy Pate with the city's development services, who was thrilled to open the trail system of Mount Kessler to the public.
I was fortunate enough to be introduced to Mount Kessler several years ago by some trail running friends, including Allison, and I've never stopped coming back. Mount Kessler is truly a legacy acquisition. It's a place that once you visit, you really understand why Frank, why Mayor Jordan and the City Council, why the Walton Family Foundation, why OORC, FNHA, and so many others have put effort into preserving this for our future generations to enjoy it as our ancestors have and as we will, as we are today.
Pate mentioned the year-long effort by the city and his own effort of personally taking a representative of the Walton Family Foundation out on a hike on the land to try and show him the incredible asset it would be to the public and why Fayetteville loves it so much. The city now owns 630 acres of contiguous land with over 8 miles of trails and natural environment for the public to enjoy. Pate encouraged people to use it, but when they do, sign into a trail log.
This is the way we keep a log of folks that are utilizing the trail. It's important not only because this is a very remote trail with not a lot of access to it should you be injured, but it's also important for our grant opportunities now and in the future to measure how we utilize our trail system and plan for the future of those. Also, the trail log allows us to know who our users are, whether you're hiking, you're biking, whether you're running, simply seeing what the mountain has to offer. It also lets us know if you're from in-state, a tourist from out-of-state, or a class doing research. And part of this is economic development as well.
He asks that users stay on the one-mile trail leading up to the mountain, mentioning the signs along the way to guide them. A project coordinator with the Walton Family Foundation followed Pate and promised to be brief and bright as he highlighted the professionalism of the city staff and their passion for the project in seeing the dream become a reality. He also mentioned how this trail system feeds into the mission of the foundation to improve the quality of life in Northwest Arkansas. Supporter of Mount Kessler and Frank Sharp are practically synonymous. He owns the land north of the property and has allowed access by the public for quite some time. He said that the stars were so much in a line on this project that it was a constellation, a Milky Way, if you will. He credited the efforts of the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association, who years ago committed $300,000 to preserve the land and to build trails on the property, along with the city support and the physical efforts of Ozark Off-Road Cyclists, all of which, he says, could not have been done without the support of the land's neighbors.
It's really been a little disruptive. There's been no parking, but we felt like we needed to raise awareness. And so we worked out how they could park at the smokehouse and come through our place. And then if Jane Steele would give them permission to go through her place, they would then be at the trail system. And so I talked to Jane. Jane's right here. As you leave Rock City, coming through from the west side, if you leave Rock City, most of that is on Jane's place. There's the old.
I randomly spoke with Jane Steele before the evening's events and overheard one of the city council members thank her for the use of her property and to tell her how beautiful it was. She said it was no problem and that she's happy that others are able to enjoy the land as she is up in her years and no longer able to herself. She was quite humble, needing a chair to sit in, yet moving it away from the line that had been set up as she said she was not a VIP. But a VIP she is indeed, as are the other neighbors and all advocates who help push these preservation efforts.
You were great big stars in this. And I think I've got just about everybody. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. One other star in this constellation. I checked with this person a couple of years ago to be sure that this person agreed with what we were attempting. This person said that, yes, we had 110% support, but we need to figure out a way to get the money. And this person is our next speaker, Mayor Lionel Jordan.
Mayor Jordan welcomed the crowd with the question, "Don't you just love this city?" And said that most of what he had planned to say had already been said by the others. But he did bring up the word vision.
When you look up the word vision, it's a Latin word that says to see or to imagine, or to see with imagination.
As a former carpenter, he says that when he was given a set of blueprints, he saw the finished product, as he did with Mount Kessler. And that vision has become a reality. He finished by thanking everyone who had the vision and made Mount Kessler possible for Fayetteville, a great city. The ribbon was cut by representatives of all involved, including a few youngsters armed with safety scissors.
Three.
The trailhead and the trail connecting it to Mount Kessler are ready for cyclists, walkers, commuters, hikers, runners, and lovers of nature to enjoy. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Karnatz.
It is Tuesday, July 15th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Creepy crawly news of the day.
All right.
Well, the libraries are having creepy crawly adventures this week.
Mm-hmm.
The Fayetteville Public Library at 1 and 2 on Wednesday has Animal Tales, which is an animal education organization from Kentucky. And they will have sort of a show and tell of all sorts of exciting creepy crawly critters, birds, reptiles, amphibians, mammals, even some fish.
Okay.
And then at the Rogers Public Library, the same day at 2 o'clock, they will have Park Ranger Alan Bland on hand to talk about reptiles.
All right.
So it's a creepy crawly week at the library. And if you don't want creepy crawlies on those 2 days, and I could get the page turned to read my notes, there's Birds of Prey at 10 o'clock Wednesday at the Rogers Public Library with Linscomb Beto.
I keep meaning to get one to go to one of those.
Amazing.
I know.
They're amazing.
There's also a reason they don't schedule the Birds of Prey and the reptile shows on the same day at the same library. It could end
you think?
Very poorly, yes.
Dan Scoff, the KNWA meteorologist, is at the Springdale Public Library at 10 on Thursday to talk about weather. And there's family music with Fork and Knife at 10:30 Thursday at the Fayetteville Public Library.
I like them.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard them.
Oh, they're great.
Folk, I assume?
Old time.
Yeah.
You know, historic, old time, but played with such enthusiasm and vigor. And they're such sweethearts.
There's so
they're
much great
folks.
Music. So it should be a good week if you're a kid or can sneak out of work.
Right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. In just a moment on the program, a Fayetteville company earns a spot on a prestigious tech list for 2014. We'll hear about the innovation at APEI.
There are plenty of other bits of tech news and opportunities in our listening area. The group Faster Arkansas is taking its message regarding the importance of connecting all Arkansas students and children to a high-speed internet connection across the state this week. First stop today in Fayetteville. Another is scheduled for tomorrow evening in Fort Smith at Chaffin Middle School from 6 until 7. Speakers tomorrow night include Benny Gooden, the superintendent of Fort Smith Schools, and Teresa Ragsdale, the superintendent of Hartford Schools. Faster Arkansas is dedicated to ensuring all students receive the high-speed internet access they need. Principals of the organization center around the fact that Arkansas schools need better access to internet content, video, and courses for the upcoming school year, and that many schools in the state do not have the capacity to meet those challenges.
Northwest Arkansas Community College will host a robotics camp for students who will be in 5th, 6th, or 7th grade during the upcoming school year. The camp is next week, July 21st through the 24th, at the NWAC campus. The college will provide students attending the sessions with the opportunity to have fun programming a Lego Mindstorms robotics system. Topics will include mechanical design, gear ratios, and programming. Participants will not take the computer or Lego robotics home. Cost for the four-day camp is $250. Participants are asked to bring a sack lunch and water will be provided. Sessions will be from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day. Those seeking additional information or wishing to register can call 936-5175.
The Bentonville Public Library is embracing science this month. This Thursday and next Thursday, the library is hosting Giants of Science workshops for kids. This week's workshop uses Jacques Cousteau as inspiration. Next Thursday's session will concentrate on the legendary dinosaur research of Barnum Brown. The workshops are intended for students who will be in 4th through 6th grades next year. They begin each Thursday at 1 and will last an hour and a half. Also at the Bentonville Library this weekend, physics workshop for 5th and 6th graders. Registration for all events required. More information at bentonvillelibrary.org.
The Fort Smith Library will also be talking science this Thursday. Science Craft Day at the Tween and Teen Book Lovers Club is Thursday at 4 and promises a chance to let one's inner mad scientist emerge with some hands-on experiments. More about the event can be found at fortsmithlibrary.org.
And the Fayetteville Library has science for summer, too. There are Mad Science with Steve Cox sessions a week from tomorrow. Registration required. The library will also host an off-site session about molecular gastronomy at Mayflower Restaurant. That's a week from today, beginning at 2. It's open to teens. Participants will hear from Chef William McCormick about how science and cuisine are related, and they'll be able to taste food manipulated on the molecular level. The event is free, but registration is required since seating is limited. For more information, go to faylib.org.
High-tech and low-tech meet Saturday at the Rogers Library when a local Makers Fair is held from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. Maker Fairs celebrate makers and the maker movement by bringing together designers, creators, artists, and builders to show off what they made. From knitted items to chainmail, from skateboards to hand-built race cars, and from radios to robots, if you build it, they want to see it. Maker Fairs are described by organizers as a cross between science fairs, craft fairs, car shows, and sci-fi conventions. The fair this Saturday will include demonstrations, a simulated spaceship bridge, live music, and a Minecraft tournament. Bring your own laptop. The event at the Rogers Public Library is open to the public and free.
All ages invited to watch a movie about science, Contact, at the Buckyball outside Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. That takes place the night of July 25th at 8. The outdoor screening of the movie starring Jodie Foster is free. Registration is required. You can sign up at crystalbridges.org.
The Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History will soon have some new tech hardware to record the history of the state. Three Northwest Arkansas legislators recently announced gifts totaling $35,000 to help purchase a new digital editing station, new field equipment, and to help pay for the digitizing of 200 hours of footage donated to the center by KATV in Little Rock. The Pryor Center is currently in the process of moving into new headquarters on the east side of the Fayetteville Square. And you can see the final installment of the PBS series Time Scanners featuring the staff at the University of Arkansas Center for Spatial Technologies tonight. The third episode lets us watch as the cast technicians use laser technology to make a digital map of the ancient city of Petra. The show begins tonight at 7 on AETN.
For each of the past 52 years, R&D Magazine has compiled a list of its choices for the 100 most technologically significant products introduced into the marketplace in a year's time. This year's R&D 100 was announced last week, and Fayetteville-based Arkansas Power Electronics International, or APEI, was included. The company's silicon carbide-based plug-in hybrid electric vehicle battery charger earned the award. Friday afternoon, the company, founded in Fayetteville in 1997, held a small celebration in honor of being recognized for what some call the Oscars of Innovation. Alex Lostetter, the president and CEO of APEI, says the battery charger the firm has put together with its partners represents a change for the electric hybrid vehicle industry. He says their development will allow a Prius owner to plug into the wall and charge the battery system.
Most of the hybrid electrics aren't plug-in systems. They are what we call regenerative energy, and so you're out driving around, and when you hit the brakes and slow down, that's what recharges your battery. Here, what has made this special is that over what Toyota's technology today is, we've made things 10 times smaller and lighter, and it's more energy efficient than what Toyota presently has in the Prius.
This project is 3.5 years in development, and Ty McNutt, the company's director of business development, says while there is still more development to be done on the charger, the possibilities for what it might mean are dramatic.
This has the potential to change the way plug-in hybrids and electric vehicles are being used, and hopefully get users over the range anxiety of electric vehicles. They want to have the comfort of being able to charge anywhere, charge fast, charge efficiently, and that's what new technologies such as this charger enables them to do.
Friday's announcement included specifics about the charger for engineers, but also a very simple, tactile demonstration of how APEI's charger improves on the current standard, a large silver charger rested on a lectern. This, explained Ty McNutt, is the older charger.
It uses silicon technology that is limited in temperature and switching frequency capability, so you see a much larger system. It also has to have a cooling fan to cool down the electronics.
Next to it, a sleek, much lighter, and much smaller black piece of equipment. This is the one developed by APEI.
Ours is obviously 10 times smaller, lighter weight, can do much more power, 3 to 4 times more power than the silicon version. So that enables the end user in the application, the Toyota Prius, to charge the batteries on the Prius 3 to 4 times faster than what you could with existing technology.
The range of markets possibly affected by this breakthrough include not just electric vehicles, but also renewable energy sources, boats, solar power, wind power, and military vehicles. To make it to this point, APEI utilized the talents of several individuals and groups. By the time Alex and Ty had asked each of the engineers involved to stand up with them, there were nearly a dozen people standing up. Also part of the development, the University of Arkansas for integrated circuit work, Oak Ridge National Laboratories for more circuitry expertise, North Carolina-based Cree Incorporated for semiconductor chips, and Toyota. Alex Lostetter, the president and CEO of the company, says now that the feasibility of their charger concept has been proven, the next step is to advance the technology into manufacturing. Friday, he was asked how an engineer or a team of engineers knows they're on the right track to a product that can crack the R&D 100 list.
That's a really good question. We're always, as a company, we're pushing the limits of the technology. We're always trying to get not to the next level, but the level beyond that. Sometimes you're successful, sometimes you're not, sometimes you fail. You learn from your failures and you pick up and you push forward on your successes. And we're always aiming to achieve that. We don't always accomplish it, but sometimes, like this case, we do accomplish it. So it's exciting.
So when, then, does the work reveal itself to be a success? That question has a very simple and very understandable answer.
When you flip on the power switch and it turns on and it runs and everything's running right, that's when you know you've got something.
APEI was founded in 1997 and is the largest company affiliated with the University of Arkansas at the Arkansas Research and Technology Park. It is rubbing shoulders with some familiar corporate names on this year's R&D 100, including American Standard, Hitachi, Los Alamos National Laboratories, and MIT. The company was previously included in the 2009 list for its work on a high-temperature silicon carbide power module. And last year, Springdale-based Manotech was on the R&D 100 list. Ty McNutt, the director of business development for APEI, says there is work left to be done with the charger, but the technology could be a game changer because it reduces weight in the vehicle and gives users the flexibility to charge a battery quickly, like at work, for example.
And then go to lunch on an electric charge, saving fuel, saving space in the vehicle. and really changing the way onboard battery chargers will be implemented in the vehicle, and as well opening up other applications from golf carts to heavy vehicles to anywhere you have a battery to be charged and you need a smaller, lighter weight, more efficient technology.
You can read more about APEI and their silicon carbide electric vehicle battery charger at the company's website, APEI.net.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, what economic ramifications, if any, would the legal sale of alcohol in all 75 Arkansas counties have on those counties currently not selling alcohol?
One of the assumptions we made is that the people in these counties are pretty much like the people, average Arkansans everywhere. And we know that on average, Arkansans spend $191 a year on liquor and wine sales. They spend another $150 a year on beer sales. And so if we assume that the folks in these counties are, in fact, acting like demographically similar people throughout Arkansas, we can assume that they're actually already spending money on retail liquor.
An economic prediction about wet counties all over the natural state. That's tomorrow on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Writer Paul Theroux has traveled the world, and his latest journey takes him through the past, present, and future of the most impoverished corners of the American South.
It is an overlooked America, but I think it's an undervalued America.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
NPR's Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3. On KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. How you react to this next bit of news may depend on what you thought of PE when you were in school. Dodgeball will be on display Saturday in a big way at the BOK Center in Tulsa. And you and five friends can still form a team. Brian Smith is special events manager at the venue, and he's with me on the phone. Brian, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Hi, thank you.
And in a moment, we'll be talking to a colleague of yours as well, Riley Longacre. But Brian, first I want to ask, this is dodgeball like many of us remember inside on those rainy days, isn't it?
Correct. This is your middle school PE pastime coming back to life here at the BOK Center on the arena floor. We're having people dress up, be goofy, and get ready to play some old school dodgeball.
Well, before I ask you about the costumes and the names of teams, let's talk about the rules. You throw the ball at someone, and you hope to hit them, and you hope they don't catch it.
That's right. It's pretty simple. Back to those basic rules. A lot of dodging will be happening, a lot of moving around. We expect to see some crazy throws, some crazy dives, catches, things like that. It's always fun to watch.
Who can enter?
Anyone 18 and older can enter a team. The teams are a minimum of 6 people. You can have up to 10 people on your team. So we've seen, you know, full range of people, some people real competitive, practicing, others out there just to have a good time and really enjoy the day. So it's really open for everyone.
Fun and creativity is encouraged here by uniforms and team names. This is not the first year for Dodge Brawl at the BOK Center in downtown Tulsa. Can you remember some names or uniforms that struck a chord in previous Dodge Brawls?
Yes, I can. Last year, one of the names, I believe the best team name that we had was Fresh Prince of Ball Air. So it's kind of a spinoff of the TV show, and their costume was pretty great, too. We also had a team who all dressed up, and they called themselves the Dodgin' Hillbillies. And so they had mullet wigs and cut-off flannel and cut-off jean shorts and just really went all out and had fun with it.
You're, of course, in Oklahoma, and many of our listeners do live in Oklahoma, but do you happen to know, right offhand, if you've had any Arkansas entries in previous years?
You know, I'm not sure that we have. We see a lot of people, obviously, in Tulsa and some of the smaller surrounding communities, but I don't know if we've had our Arkansas team in, so hopefully this will get some people interested and drive out on Saturday and register their team.
Now, Riley, I understand that even if you don't want to participate in the Dodge Brawl tournament, there's something going on inside that anyone can participate in, right?
Yes, that is true. We are having Live Great 918 Tulsa Fitness Fair presented by St. John Health System in our Grand Lobby this year, which is a new event, and we are highlighting 40 health and fitness vendors, just having everyone come out and see all the great opportunities that are available in Tulsa as far as living a healthy lifestyle goes.
And for those of our listeners who are in Arkansas, the Live Great 918 refers to the area code there in Tulsa.
Exactly.
Is there any charge to get into either the tournament or the expo?
No, that is the best part of our events. They are totally free to the public and any spectators that want to come partake in either of those events.
All right, Brian, let me ask you, what special skills will lead to someone winning the championship?
A lot of luck. Good. I always think that's important in a fun event like this. Just being agile, being anticipating a ball coming at your face and being able to move it out of the way, those are always good skills. You know, athleticism is a good part of it, but I'll go back to my original answer of luck and just having fun with it. You know, not taking it too seriously, enjoying the day and having fun with your friends and colleagues that you're playing with.
Teams get bragging rights if they win, but also a charity of their choice gets some money.
Correct. Each team, when they register, is asked to select a charity or a nonprofit that they want to represent. And so the top three winning teams of our tournament will win prize money that we will cut a check to the charities that they represent based on first, second, and third place. The prize amounts will be based on that. But it's really great to be able to give back to the community in whatever capacity we can with these events. And so it's kind of another incentive to come and play and really represent that charity that you're passionate about.
And there's still time to register a team.
Correct. We do still have limited number of team registrations available. Those registrations can be filled out at our website, TulsaDodgeBrawl.com. We're hoping to get those last few spots filled so that we can have the fullest tournament we've ever had.
Brian Smith is the Special Events Manager at the BOK Center in Tulsa. Riley Longacre is Special Events Coordinator. Thank you both for your time. What's, you know, for an actor, you say break a leg. What do you say to someone who's about to step on the floor for a dodgeball tournament?
Going back to the movie, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Thank you both very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Decatur.
Tickets are now available at Alma Performing Arts Center for the 2014-15 season. Entertainment includes The Letterman, Glenn Miller Orchestra and the Diamonds, American Spirit Dance, and more. Tickets and more information available at almapac.org or 632-2129. Cool this morning.
Yeah.
Very cool, but no record low.
No.
The record low in Fayetteville for July 15th, set in 1967, was 49.
Okay.
So we didn't come that close. But we might, in Fayetteville, set the record low for July 16th tomorrow morning. Current record low is 55, also set in 1967. Forecast tonight, as low as 52.
Oh, man.
In Fort Smith, record low for the 16th is 57, and the projected low tonight in Fort Smith is 59.
Hmm.
No complaints here. Well, we're going to get, don't worry, by the weekend, we're back in the
sure, as long as it warms up again. I really want to go swimming, and it's just, the pool gets cold with these little cold fronts moving in. Just need a little bit more heat. That's all I'm asking.
First time ever for you this weekend in Stuttgart, Arkansas.
Yeah.
How was that?
Went to a wedding. It was warm. The reception was outside. It was warm.
That's the thing about Stuttgart. Two things about Stuttgart in July.
Mm-hmm.
It's warm,
mm-hmm.
and you may see a mosquito.
Oh, there were plenty of them.
Yes, okay. But a pleasant wedding?
Yes.
All right. Were you able to listen to and or watch the World Cup final?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I was. I did. It was a good game.
Yes, it was. Now we have to wait 4 years.
I know.
All right. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You will be back here tomorrow with Christina Karnatz.
I will.
All right. Brand new episode of Ozarks at Large. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great Tuesday.